Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. This morning, in the first hour of our program, we'll be talking about the Illinois economy, and we have two guests, both of them from the University of Illinois Institute of Government and Public Affairs, David Merriman and Jeffrey Hewings. We'll be talking about some of what you'll find in a recent report that's been issued by the Institute. That is the Illinois Report for 2008, which takes a look at a number of issues, including the economy, but also things like health care, Illinois' energy outlook, poverty, inequality, education, and so forth. And I think we're expecting here on Focus 580, perhaps also on the Afternoon Magazine, over the next few weeks to have a number of people here in on the show to talk about these various areas. And we thought the place that we would start is by talking about the economy. And according to the report, the state's economy is continuing to underperform. We'll talk a little bit about the economy, how it stands up against the economy of the United States and the rest of the Midwest. And the picture here is not all bad, but it's kind of continues to be mixed. We'll also talk about some of the basic economic indicators and also try to look at what is for state government the big challenge, and that is trying to figure out how they're going to spend their money and where that money is going to come from. And of course, questions from people who are listening are certainly welcome. Let me just tell you a little bit more about our guests. David Merriman, he is, in addition to being professor in the Institute, he is a professor of public administration. And Jeff Hewings is professor of geography, economics, urban and regional planning. He's also director of the Regional Economics Application Laboratory. And we're pleased that both of them could be with us. Jeffrey Hewings is here in the studio with me. Welcome, and thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, David.
My pleasure. Joining us by telephone is David Merriman. Professor Merriman, thank you.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Well, first thing I'd like to do, and maybe I'll start here talk a little bit with Professor Hewings, and in ask some basic questions about the Illinois economy. This was the section of the report that you were the principal author. Talk about it. Your conclusion is that basically, while Illinois is doing better than some of the surrounding states, Illinois is still lagging behind the nation.
Yeah, I think that's a very good way of framing it. Last year, the U.S. added approximately 1% to its employment rolls, about 1.3 million jobs. Illinois added 42,000 at a rate that was about three-quarters for the U.S., and that is probably the best relationship that we've had for over 15 years. Traditionally or historically, we've grown at about half the rate for the U.S. So 2007 was a good year. It was a good year in that sense, but in another way, we didn't do quite as well as we did in 2006 when we added 64,000 jobs. But there again, the U.S. economy grew also much, much more rapidly. Your point about the Midwest, I think, is very important from the following perspective. Even though we can take some pleasure in many ways from the fact that we grew more rapidly, in fact, we added 42,000 jobs. The states of Wisconsin, Indiana, Michigan, Ohio, Iowa, and Missouri together lost 38,000 jobs. And to some extent, we can gloat a little bit about that, but the bad news is that 40% of our exports, domestic exports, go to these states. So the fact that these economies are not doing well does not bode well for us into the future. And in particular, of course, the state of Michigan alone last year lost 77,000 jobs, in large part because of the shakeout in the automobile industry. And in Illinois, we have a lot of supply chain components that are made here that are likely to be threatened over the next several years with this shakeout.
Mm. Let me turn to David Merriman. I don't know if there's anything you would like to add or you want to anything in there that you think is particularly important that you want to underline?
Well, I guess I think that, you know, the situation in the economy seems to be on the verge of, you know, turning down, and so what's happened in the past is interesting, but I think we really have to be, you know, cautious and have our eyes on what's going on in the future, especially in the next few months, obviously.
Well, let me turn back to Jeff Hewings. One of the things that you look at in the report is you look at job growth, job creation, and apparently the peak in recent years came in the fall of 2000. And I think we know what happened after that. There was, first of all, there was a recession. Then there was September 11th of 2001, and those things combined hit the economy very hard, not just the economy of the state of Illinois, but the economy of the United States. And now economists are looking at the question of recession now. Are we in a recession? Are we going into a recession? If you look at what happens here in the Illinois economy and you look at what happens in the national economy, are the kind of pressures that come to bear, are they essentially the same? Does Illinois, what happens in Illinois, is that a reflection of the rest of the economy, or is there something about Illinois that makes it, or perhaps about the Midwest as a region, that suggests there are particular problems mm-hmm. that we experience that are different from what happens in California or New York or Florida or someplace else?
Yeah, that's a very good question. The sort of paradox, I think I would put it this way, is our economy looks very much like the U.S. if we look at the percentage allocation on a sector-by-sector basis. The problem is we just have not grown as rapidly, and that's a conundrum that we are trying to unravel with some ongoing research. You mentioned that our previous employment peak was in November 2000. We're still 68,000 below that peak. And given the record of last year when we only grew 42,000 and the fact that the year before, which was a very good year, we added 64,000, we're at least a year away. Now, to frame this in the context of what has happened in the post-war period, Illinois has never had a period more than 8 years between the time of a downturn and the time it recovered its prior peak. Our forecast now is that it's going to be over 9 years before we recover. And as David alluded, the economy right now is on a bubble. We don't know whether it's going to go down. And if that is the case, it may be even longer before we catch up. At the same time, our labor force has expanded. The population has increased. And so we have to sort of account for that by saying, well, what do we need to create to have approximately the same level of participation in the labor force? And that would be another 51,000 jobs. So in essence, we're almost 2 years behind catching up to something that would be comparable to November 2000. So that's the challenge before we have seen really the onset of some of the downturn that we've observed nationally and on both coasts gradually penetrate the Illinois economy. Fred Gertz has commented in the publication of the latest Flash Index that actually tax receipts had gone up. The economy seemed in December to be doing well. We actually grew 5,200 jobs in December. But my experience is that 1 month is very difficult to sort of extrapolate. And I think David is sort of warning us that it's what's going to happen over the next several months. And I agree with that.
Yeah. And of course, that matters to state government for a lot of reasons.
Yes.
But the one thing I'm sure that we'll be concentrating here on is obviously that matters because it's going to determine what kind of revenue the state has to draw on to then take that money and spend it on whatever the state wants to spend the money on. And we know that there are all sorts of areas in which there is significant demand, particularly things like Medicare, education, and so forth. And so the big question is, well, how do you satisfy those needs? What do you determine is the most important thing, and where do you spend your money? And then connected with that, it's sort of separate, but obviously connected with that is, well, what do you do to raise money? Is there anything that you can do to increase your revenues?
I think David might be the best person to answer that question.
Right. I think, that's an issue that the state has to face squarely, and I don't think we have in the past. The sort of the state's kind of fiscal situation is we don't really have the revenues to do what we're doing now. If you think about the state's entire situation, we're running a deficit, even though constitutionally the state needs to have at least a balanced budget presented to the legislature. If you take into account the fact that we're falling behind on our pension costs, that we're accruing debt by not paying our Medicaid bills on time, et cetera, we don't even have the money to do what we're doing now. The governor is talking about, new proposals and expansions of medical services or health insurance for swaths of the population. and the fact that the economy is perhaps going to turn down, which is going to threaten revenues, we're in a very precarious fiscal situation.
Well, the governor did that certainly did that last year. We are now, I think, maybe about 2 weeks away from this year's State of the State and Budget address. So we'll see what it is that he has to say. But one of the things that he did last year was talked about some significant increase in what the state was spending in particular areas. Healthcare
right.
Was a big one, and he also then made some proposals about new sources of revenue, and one of the big ones was this. He proposed this gross receipts tax that he said could raise something like $6 billion. Well, that I think that landed with a great thud in Springfield. I don't think that there was anybody in the General Assembly that was particularly keen on that, so that sort of went nowhere. I guess the thing that I find myself wondering is whether anybody in Springfield I'm not going to say anybody because that would include the governor. Anybody in the General Assembly would be willing to talk seriously about anything that would lead to a significant increase in revenues with the possible exception of building some more casinos.
Well, I mean, I think there was significant consideration of expanding the sales tax to services. There was a bill introduced, I believe it passed through at least the House committee, and I don't have the number in front of me, but so there was some significant talk about increasing revenues through that mechanism, but it's hard when you have three branches of the legislature and you've got to get all three to agree on something. The governor's taken a very firm stand against sales or income tax increases, so the kind of whether there could be any kind of compromise seems difficult. The governor is focused on taxes, seems to be, his proposals have been focused on increasing taxes on business, and I think the story behind that is that the main state tax on business right now is the corporate income tax, and the corporate income tax has been dwindling as a share of revenue, and that's true in Illinois and in the nation as a whole. So the governor and some other legislators have been trying to figure out how do we get the share of revenue contributed by business back up to the kind of the ratio that it used to have, say, 10, 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm. I know that, I guess this has been some years ago, one of your colleagues, Fred Gertz, was here on the program, and we talked a little bit about the proposal. He actually stood up and said, you know, the only way we're going to deal with this problem of not having the money we need is by increasing income taxes. And he said, well, why don't we think seriously, at least start talking about an income tax hike. He said it would be temporary, but a tax hike. And he seemed to be saying, and I think a lot of other people would say, look, let's be real here. We need more revenue. The only way we can do that really reliably to get the money that we need would be to increase income tax. Could you imagine anybody in Springfield in the General Assembly standing up saying, hey, okay, I think it's a great idea. I'd support that. I'd go on the record for that.
Well, I'm not sure whether anyone is going to do it without at this point in time because the chances of getting it through the legislature and past the governor are very small. So you'd have to pay a high political price for supporting something that probably wouldn't go through. I think what you'd really need for a general tax increase would be to get all three branches of the state legislature together and to agree on it and so that the political heat is shared. But in the short run, I guess I think it's probably hard to imagine that happening. In the long run, the state's going to have to do something about revenues, I think, because we're really in an untenable situation. Mm-hmm. And this could happen sooner rather than later if we hit a recessionary period. In the last recession, the recession was in 2001, but the revenue really declined later than that in 2002. And revenue dipped, state revenues in Illinois and around the country dipped much more than, we had a relatively mild decline in economic activity, but we had a big decline in revenue. If that sort of pattern was repeated now, the state would be in desperate shape very quickly, and that could even in the current political environment, possibly get galvanized political strength to actually pass some kind of broad-based tax reform.
I want to turn back here to Jeffrey Huings. Obviously, when, and as you might have expected, when the governor came out and talked about this grocery receipts tax, the business community in the state of Illinois said, this is very bad.
Right.
And I expect that there might be people who would say, you know, no matter what kind of tax increase you're talking about, they would say, it's really not good. It's not good for business. Is, and I don't really think that Illinois has the reputation of being a particularly high tax state right now. Is there some reliable relationship between tax policy and economic health in a state? And if we did do that, if we looked at some kind of tax increase, whether that's income tax, whether that's sales tax, whatever it is that, can you draw any kind of connection between that and then the economic health of the state?
Yeah, I think it's very difficult. But one comment that I hear repeatedly from folks in the private sector is they recognize that these taxes are providing services that they consume directly through transportation and other infrastructure, or indirectly by hiring skilled labor. But I think the one comment and one criticism that has been directed over the policies of the last few years is the uncertainty around them, that the gross receipts tax came out of nowhere. There was no sense of putting this on the table and having some sort of bipartisan panel that included both the legislature and the private sector involved to discuss what the implications might be. And I think that one of the I think the opportunities that the current administration has missed, I think, is to, rather than be confrontational with the private sector, to involve them in the discussion. So I would sort of add to David's comment about involving all branches of the legislature. I think it's also important to involve those that might be taxed. And I think in the case of the final proposals for the increase in revenue to fund the transit system, you had organizations like the Civic Federation promoting the notion of an increase in taxes. So I don't think there's necessarily a sort of a lockstep reaction that all taxes are bad and we don't want to have taxes increased. Obviously, businesses don't want to pay more taxes than they have to, but they also recognize that low taxes often mean low services, and that's something that they want to avoid too.
What I'd like to do here is we have a caller, so I will get to them. And also, for anyone who might have just joined us here, I'd like to introduce again the guests. On the telephone with us is David Merriman. He's professor of public administration and also professor in the Illinois Institute of Government and Public Affairs here at the University of Illinois. And also joining us here in studio is Jeffrey Huings. He has appointments in several departments, including geography, economics, and urban and regional planning. And I also want to mention that the two of them have contributed to the Institute's Illinois report for 2008. This is, I believe, now the second year that this report has been issued that tries to look at Illinois and a broad range of issues. As I mentioned, we talk about education, primary, secondary, higher. We talk about infrastructure, energy, health care, and the economy. It is available online, so you can read it that way. If you go to the website of the Institute, igpa.uiuc.edu, you can take a look at the report. I'm sure also that way you can get a hard copy if you like, but if you'd like to read it online, you can do it that way. And questions here are welcome. 333-9455. That's the number here in Champaign-Urbana. We do also have a toll-free line. That means if it would be a long-distance call for you, use the toll-free line, and we'll pay for the call. That's 800-222-9455. We do have a caller, and the listener here is in Champaign on line one. Hello.
Yeah, hello there.
Yes.
There's too many things to talk about. Just a couple that would be interesting to me. Mm-hmm. What's the chance of reducing expenditures like the wasteful 10% increase that we've had in the pay for legislators and excessive extra meetings? And is there any good reason why our president should laud Caterpillar as one of our fine outstanding industries, which has simply gone ahead and cut by 50% its pay rate? and I'm off the air now.
Right.
I'm off the phone, and I'll listen.
All right, thank you. I'll go. We'll go with David Merriman first, and then Jeff Ewings. You can each take your shot at either or both of the questions.
Okay. Well, I really can't comment on the Caterpillar question, but on the possibility of cutting expenditures, certainly there are some efficiencies that could be achieved. I think the cost of running the legislature is a relatively small cost, but it's certainly symbolic of the kinds of things that, you know, the state could do. Much more important is probably the long-term pension agreements that we have with our workers and health insurance agreements that we have with state workers. The thing is that we shouldn't delude ourselves that we can cut pensions or cut health benefits to workers without some consequences. When workers take jobs, they consider their entire pay package and their entire compensation package, and if we try and cut benefits, then we're going to either get a less qualified workforce, or we're going to have to raise salaries. So I think there certainly are some efficiencies. I don't think they're going to be nearly big enough to right the fiscal situation without also getting some more revenues. Hmm.
And you want to add anything to that, Jeff?
Let me just make the comment about Caterpillar. I think that without commenting on the specifics there, I think this has been a long-term trend that we've seen in the state. Since 1990, we've lost 250,000 manufacturing jobs. But the surprising thing is that the volume of production in manufacturing has really not declined very much. In fact, in some years, it's actually increased. And what that means is that our labor is incredibly productive. And this is one thing that often does not get much play. We, for many, many years, have led the Midwest, and for 10 or plus years in the 1990s, we actually led the nation and even exceeded the labor productivity in Japan. But there is now, with the advent of very cheap transportation costs, enormous pressures on companies to reduce their costs. And for many companies in manufacturing, labor represents 25% to 30% of the costs. So if they're going to be internationally competitive vis-a-vis locations elsewhere, there is enormous pressure to decrease them. Now, that doesn't justify it, but I think it just does provide a little bit of context that Caterpillar is not unusual in this whole process. And in the automobile industry and the supply chain, we've seen this again and again, where the major producers have been putting pressure on their suppliers to reduce their costs, and in many cases they've been forced to relocate to Mexico initially, and now to China, to Vietnam, and Indonesia and Malaysia.
Hmm. I'm glad the caller raised this issue of spending, the need to reduce spending. It seems to me that particularly if you talk to members of the General Assembly and you ask them about this very problem, the revenue spending problem, they're not going to talk very much about revenues, but they're certainly going to talk about the need to control spending, as if all that was necessary was for us to be a little bit smarter and more efficient in the way we spend our money, and that we wouldn't have such a problem. But when one looks at where the state spends the money, the biggest chunk is, it's almost 32% goes to health care and family services.
Mm-hmm.
A little over 28% goes to education. That's next. Then we get human services. That's 16.5%. The big chunks seem to be in places where we're really committed to spending the money. And for example, even when we talk about education, people say we should be spending more. So it seems unlikely that by just tweaking here and there, particularly in these big sections where we're spending all this money, that we're going to manage to save much money.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. Right, the pressures on education are for the state to give more. We, as a state, we contribute a smaller share than most other states to local K-12 education. At higher education, we've seen frozen budgets, and now we recently did get an increase, but relatively small increases in higher education. And in healthcare and family services, I mean, we're not even keeping up our bills with our bills now. We're certainly going to have to spend more there. So, yeah, it's very difficult to see how we can make major cuts in spending given the current situation.
Mm-hmm. Also, too, there has been some criticism of the governor for developing new programs, so particularly having to do with health care.
Right.
But I wonder if you say, take that away, if we didn't do anything new, if we just continue to do what we're doing now, spend money in the basic areas where we spend now, and you have to, I suppose, factor in some natural increase in costs because of inflation and so forth, things just right. continue to get more expensive. If we didn't do anything new, we would still have a problem.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's absolutely right. I mean, I guess the one kicker is that we don't know what's going to happen on the federal level with health care. I mean, with a new president, I think there's very likely to be major proposals. How that will affect the states is unclear, but I think it's at least as likely to put more financial burden on the states as it is to put less financial burden on the states. So I think we shouldn't be optimistic that the federal government will bail us out. We don't have a sustainable fiscal system at this point.
Yeah, and I guess it is worth pointing out, and people obviously can see this in the report, that if you take a look at where the revenue comes from, the biggest chunk of revenue coming to the state comes from the federal government.
Mm-hmm.
It is a little over 27%, which is certainly more than what we get from income tax and the other taxes not altogether, but the biggest single source comes from the federal government. And what I hear you saying is we certainly shouldn't expect that to grow.
Right. And you know, the largest part of that is actually Medicaid, which is a very, very big expenditure. That's basically low-income and elderly health care subsidies. And there's been a lot of pressure at the federal level to reduce Medicaid spending, and that pressure is certainly going to continue. Mm. So it's going to make it difficult.
I don't know if either of you know or if anybody knows, have there been any kind of hints coming out of Springfield about what the governor's likely to propose this year?
We've heard rumors, but I think at this point, I think it's likely that we'll get a proposal that for a major revenue increase, but I don't know the form of it.
All right. Well, let's talk with another caller here. We have someone in Champaign again. That's line number two. Hello.
Hi. I was just listening, and I'm always concerned when somebody starts talking about the problems with pensions and stuff like that, as if that there's talk about trying to reduce these things. I work here at the University of Illinois, and whenever somebody starts talking about pensions, I always feel like people should be reminded that pensions are basically our Social Security. They are not an additional, like a lot of, you know, pensions from other companies, they are not an additional pension, you know, on top of Social Security. Since we don't pay into Social Security, we pay into the state retirement plan. This is our Social Security, and anybody who has worked for the University of Illinois or any other state agency is pretty much stuck with that for their Social Security, because even if they had paid in earlier, it's, you know, the declined amount, the amount that they will get, and they also have to pay, they also are penalized, by this so-called double-dipping business, so that even if their husband had Social Security, they're penalized on collecting both of it. So I am always very concerned when people start talking about money and looking for sources, and they don't mention at the same time that this is our, so, you know, that people who have worked for the state government for a long time, that these pensions are our Social Security, not an additional pension on top of Social Security.
All right. Well, I appreciate the comment. I don't know, Professor Hewing, do you have anything to say about that? No, he shakes his head no. Dave Merriman, you?
I mean, I think she's right, of course, that university employees don't pay into Social Security and don't get those benefits. Cutting pensions expenditures would be very, very difficult. It would have to be part of a negotiated process, and it wouldn't be free. So I think that that's all true. I think it's such a big expenditure. The state has to look at whether the compensation package it's offering to its employees is appropriate. One of the things that we do in the state now is for retired employees. We cover their post-retirement health care benefits, 100% of those. That's unusual compared to most private industries. We get some benefit for that in that we get loyal employees. It's a big benefit of working for the state, but it's an issue that I think still needs to be looked at.
Well, as a state employee, all I can say is I wish that 15 years ago I would have realized that the ramifications of going to work for a state and basically losing my Social Security benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And then have politicians continually to talk about this as a possible way of saving money because they don't have the guts to go ahead and realize that just like everything else, they need to figure out some way of either raising taxes or something like that if we want to have a halfway decent, you know, state which provides halfway decent services, you know, for its citizens. This is not a high tax. Believe it or not, this is not a high tax state. And but we want to, you know, we want to have these good services. And, you know, at some point somebody has to have some guts and say, well, hey, maybe we need to pay for this. As a citizen here and a taxpayer, I would prefer to pay more and get more services, or at least to get, you know, the services to stay at a, you know, at a reasonable level. It affects the quality of my life to, you know, to know that areas like prisons and stuff are so understaffed that it is a security risk to all of us. You can't cut forever, and you know, but it does require some courage on the part of government, and you know, these people who just continually say, you know, make these promises that they will never raise taxes, they don't have much credibility with me in terms of them being brave or anything. They're cowards.
All right. Well, I thank you for the comment again. I don't know, David Merwin, you want. Follow up on that at all?
No.
All right. It is, I suppose, worth making the point that the state constitution does mandate that the benefits to retirees will be paid, mm-hmm. but that doesn't necessarily mean that the legislature couldn't find some way to trim what it is, the amount of money that they're paying out. And I suppose cutting back on what they pay for health care for retirees would be one way.
Right. And I think there are also, I don't believe there's a constitutional mandate that we can't tax pensions. So that would, of course, change the return.
Yeah. And also, I suppose it's worth mentioning that here at the state of Illinois, we have the dubious distinction of having, I think, maybe the most underfunded pension system in the country, if not the most.
We're near the bottom.
Okay,
it changes from year to year as they do the calculations, but I think we're consistently in the bottom five.
Yeah. But David, you mentioned something that I want to go back to in terms of the sources of revenue for the state and how important the federal government was. The analysis is done in terms of looking at how much we contribute to the federal government and how much we get back, we're one of the states that gets back less than other states, usually something of the order of 80 to 85 cents for every dollar we send to Washington. And I think that we have to put this in perspective that while what goes on in Springfield to a large degree determines the health of the state's economy, the broader national picture is probably even more important. And one of the concerns we've always had is when our economy shifts to a dominance by defense spending, for example, we don't tend to do as well out of that. We're about 3%, 3.5% of the gross product nationally, but we get about 0.5% of defense spending in the state. And that defense spending is not for high-tech stuff. We basically feed the Army and the Navy and the Marines and the Air Force. So it's not exactly stuff that's likely to generate lots of innovation and the sorts of dynamics that we would associate with building high-tech material. And I think that as we look across the board in the last two or three decades, this has been a very, very consistent pattern. So that as we look at the state's economy, we've also got to be mindful about what sort of proposals are likely to be promulgated nationally. The national effect of decreasing in the value of the dollar has had a very significant uptick on our exports. We noticed in 2006 that our international exports have gone up 17%, for example. But unfortunately, they're only 15% of our total exports. The domestic exports account for the other 85. So we do get a little bit of benefit from a weaker dollar. But overall, we have not enjoyed the benefits from the last 8 years in terms of receiving a lot of benefits from the federal fiscal policy.
We are moving into about our last 15 minutes. I would again like to introduce our guests. Here in the studio with me is Jeffrey Hewings. He's professor of geography, economics, urban and regional planning. He's also director of the Regional Economics Applications Lab. And joining us by telephone is David Merriman. He's professor of public administration, both of them part of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs here at the University of Illinois, and both contributors to recently a released report looking at various parts of Illinois issues having to do with healthcare and education and energy and infrastructure and the economy. And that's really what we're talking about here this morning, Illinois' economy and fiscal health. This is the Illinois Report for 2008. And if you would like to read it, you can do that on the website. The entire contents of the report is on the website of the Institute. So you can go to igpa.uiuc.edu and you can read it. Questions are welcome, too. 333-WILL, toll-free, 800-222-WILL or 9455. David Merriman, was there a point that you wanted to make before I go on to the caller?
I don't think so.
Okay. Then we'll do that. And the next person here is in Urbana in line one. Hello.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yes, a few corrections. The state does not pay. I am a retiree from the University of Illinois. And the state is not paying all of our medical insurance. Actually, it shifted a lot of it over onto Medicare. And I pay for Part B, although the state had, when I took the job, said that they would be paying all of my medical insurance. But our wonderful governor found a way of shifting it back on to us. As for taxing our pension, I just got my W-2 from CSRS, and I definitely am being taxed. So I think you ought to check your facts and know what you're talking about. Another thing, you said that our state labor force is very efficient, and I would say that our schools and the university play a good part in making for that efficiency. If you cut our benefits and our salaries, we are going to be very much less inclined to take these positions and to enter education. And that certainly isn't going to do anything to improve our labor force. Care to comment?
I apologize for the incorrect fact about the healthcare. I wasn't aware of that. On pension benefits, I don't know why you're paying taxes on pension benefits. My understanding was that those are not taxable at the state level, but I don't know all the details.
I'm sorry. It's federal.
Oh, certainly federal tax, but the state tax. You don't pay state tax on your pension.
You're right about that.
So I certainly agree with you that if you cut benefits, that you'll get a different quality of labor force, and I said that clearly earlier. It will affect the labor force you can attract, for sure.
I think that needs to be emphasized because this keeps coming up, and people such as you, who I think are trying to be very fair about it, tend to say, yes, this is a way we can cut costs. But I think you have to give the cost benefit very much up front.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thanks for the comment. I don't know, Professor Hewings.
I just want to amplify David's last comment and the listeners too. But the problem is investment in education probably takes 15 to 20 years before we finally see the benefits, and that's often several gubernatorial cycles, and it's very hard for somebody to think about investing now when the benefits are going to be so far into the future. But clearly, by not doing that, we really do compromise the future competitiveness of this state's economy.
One of the things that I wanted to ask, I thought I would ask Jeffrey Hewings earlier, and we got into some other issues, was just to take a minute and talk about in what sectors is the Illinois economy strongest? That is, what is it we are doing, making, selling, that's generating the most revenue?
Well, surprisingly, even though we've lost a lot of jobs in manufacturing, it's still an important segment of the economy and does account for a huge percentage of our production. And going back to the previous caller's comment, one of the comments I hear repeatedly from people in the manufacturing sector is they can't find skilled labor. So we're losing probably more jobs in the state than we need to, because a lot of firms cannot find skilled labor, so they're not investing in new machinery. Therefore, they cannot meet new quality standards, so they're having to either close down or relocate. And I think that we've gone through a period of probably a decade or two decades where we've significantly underinvested in technical education. We've had a sort of pejorative view about blue-collar jobs as being really not very nice, and it's much better if you go work in the information sector or in the professional and business services sector. However, when we look at what's going on, it is the professional and business services that have been the growth performers. And in fact, they're probably one of the few sectors where we've come closest to matching the growth rates nationally. The other one, surprisingly, is leisure and hospitality. This is one sector where we're only a few percentage points behind the U.S. But in other sectors of the economy, for example, information, we've declined our employment since 1990, the U.S. has added 15% more in that sector. And that's sort of surprising, given the enormous concentration of high-quality universities in the state. Why is it we would not be competitive in terms of attracting and retaining firms in this particular business? And so that as you look through this picture, there are enormous disparities in terms of our performance. You know, for people who are fiscal conservatives, they'd probably be happy with the fact that our government employment has grown at half the rate nationally. But that's offset to some extent by the fact that we have grown more rapidly in education and healthcare. These are sectors that have done pretty well. But even then, they're growing at about three-quarters of the rate of the comparable sector nationally. So across the board, there isn't one sector in our economy where we've grown more rapidly than the U.S. in the last 5 years and certainly over the last 15. Hmm.
Something else that I think it's interesting, at least to touch on, that you deal with, Professor Hewings, in your section here, it has to do with immigration, people coming into the state. And this is an issue that has been hugely controversial, and I'm sure will continue to be hugely controversial, whether immigration into the United States is good, bad, or otherwise. And one of the things that you point out, though, actually, as far as the economy of Illinois is concerned and the economic and the Illinois workforce, in a broad kind of a sense, immigration has actually been good for the state because
yes.
New workers have come in, at least it's been good in the short term. The question that you raise, I think, is a really good one, is, well, what happens over the longer term, particularly when you consider the skill set that these workers have?
Yeah, I think it's a very, very complicated picture, David. The interaction between immigration mainly, particularly of Latinos, the outmigration of retirees, and the fact that our population is aging. Mm. So if we did not have that Latino immigration, gradually over the next 10 to 15 years, we would see our gross product begin to decline as our population shrinks, as is happening in Japan and France and Italy. But the longer-term implications are interesting. In the short run, that does have a small depressive effect on wages in those sectors which tend to be low-skilled. That's not surprising. But the longer run, I think, is the more important consideration. The sort of stylized facts is that we hope that the first generation just establishes themselves, encourages their children to go into school to get an education. And unfortunately, among a lot of Latino populations, the dropout rate from high school is much higher than other ethnic groups. The participation rate in higher education is much lower. The completion rates in higher education is much lower. And the concern is that 2030 and beyond, to what degree are we going to have a labor force which is significantly underskilled vis-a-vis other parts of the U.S. and other parts of the country? And I think that the organizations in the state that are focusing on this problem are very, very much aware of it, and there is a very, very big push to try to encourage this next generation to stay in school, to really be very, very proactive, because they realize that while the problem may not occur for another 10 or 15 years, if the investment is not made now, the problem is going to occur very, very much in a big time, starting in 2030, 2035.
Mm. You, David Merriwin, you want to add anything to that?
No, I think Jeff is exactly right, and we have to think long term.
Yeah. We're coming down to we have maybe about 4 or 5 minutes left. Just to go back to the point maybe where we started, when you take a look at how the economy is doing, how the economy is doing, on the one hand, one thing that we can point to that's somewhat encouraging is if you compare how we're doing to surrounding states, Iowa, Wisconsin, Indiana, Michigan, so forth. So we are doing better, but at the same time, the state's lagging behind the rest of the nation. Our growth has been behind the rest of the country. And here now, looking out, at least if we're just, say, we're just going to look out the next year, we're really not expecting things to get any better, it sounds like.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. Our current forecasts are for a growth of jobs somewhere between 35 and 40,000. Recall that this year we had 42,000, the year before we had 64, 65,000. And of course, the real issue is that we have, according to our analysis, not quite seen the full impact of the subprime mortgage meltdown affecting Illinois economy. Our construction jobs declined more rapidly than those in the U.S. The last month, even though we added 5,200 jobs. We lost a very large number of jobs in the construction sector. And if we do have a slowdown in the housing sector, that has a whole dramatic ripple effect throughout the economy in terms of construction, purchases of white goods like refrigerators, appliances, televisions, and so on and so forth. And even the transactions involved in a house sale generate on average in the state economy of about a $30,000 to $35,000 contribution. Multiply that up by all the housing sales, look at the direct and indirect effects, it's about a $1.5 billion impact. So if we have a 10% or a 15% reduction in house sales, and last month the Illinois sales went down 28%, Chicago went down 33%, that's likely to have important ramifications in terms of job growth over the next 12 months. So even though I was sort of very surprised at how low those numbers were, I think when we begin to see some of the impacts of this housing market meltdown, I think that they're likely to probably present an additional challenge to the economy.
Mm. Yeah, and I would just say it even goes beyond these kind of relatively direct interactions, in that it affects the psychology of people who aren't either buying or selling a house, and it could depress spending and make people more cautious. And so that's really has potentially very wide-ranging effects on the economy.
One question here, I don't know if this is a question that can be answered in just a couple of minutes, but I'll ask I'll pitch it to David Merriwin first, and then Jeff Hewings, and if you want to answer it, you can. When the economy is doing well, government, whether we're talking about the president or the Congress or the governor or the state legislature, likes to take credit. And when the economy is not doing well, we blame them. But really, just how much influence, how much direct influence does the government have over the economy? And can the Congress or can the legislature really do very much if the economy is not growing at the rate we'd like and not doing as well as we would like? Does the government really have much ability in a direct sense to affect it. Can they do anything about it?
Well, ironically, I mean, in the short run, I think especially the state government can do very little to affect the economy. We're going to get a business cycle. The state can't do very much about it. The federal government can use fiscal policy and monetary policy a bit more. But the government's effect on the economy is really much more long-term. Do you have a solid education system? Do you have good infrastructure, roads? Do you have a government just that seems to be reliable? Is it setting up tax policy that people have confidence in? And those effects may be relatively large, but usually voters don't vote on that. They vote on what was the unemployment rate last month or last quarter. And that's something which generally, certainly on the state level, you can't expect the legislature to have very much impact on, I don't think.
Jeff?
Just a quick comment. I think the impact at the state level is at the margin. If I'm uncertain about what I'm going to be taxed and how I'm going to be taxed, do I expand my business in Illinois or do I expand it in Iowa and Wisconsin? And I think that's what we're seeing, and that margin added up over a number of years can still result in a very significant impact on the economy. But I think David is absolutely right. The degree to which a state governor now can affect the local economy is much reduced compared to 20 years ago.
Hmm. Well, we're just at the point where we have to finish up here. I don't know, any last thought that either of you would like to leave with people on the subject before we finish up? Jeff Hewings?
No, I just think that the first 3 months of this year, as the economic data come out, I think will give us a much, much clearer implication as to whether we're going to ride this out or whether, in fact, we're going to take a severe hit.
I guess I would just like to say that we would like the three branches of government in Springfield really to work together, the legislature and the executive branch really to work together on solving our economic problems. And I really hope that people will think about that and demand that they do that.
Well, we would like to thank our guests here joining us by telephone, David Merriman. He's professor of public administration here at the U of I. Professor Merriman, thank you.
Thank you.
And here in studio with us is Jeffrey Hewings. He's professor of geography, economics, urban and regional planning. Thank you.
David, it's my pleasure.
And both of them contributors to the Illinois Report for 2008. It's just been put out by the Institute of Government and Public Affairs. You can read it online if you'd like. It deals with the Illinois economy and a number of other issues. You can go to the Institute's website, igpa.uiuc.edu, or just put Institute of Government and Public Affairs in your web browser. I'm sure you can find it, and that way you can read the report.